WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Good afternoon, ladies and gents. Welcome to another edition of Current Sports with me, Al Martin. It's Tuesday, October 22nd, 2013. Hope you all are having a great start to your week. We have a ton to get to on today's show. Mark D'Antonio, he held his weekly presser this morning, and today is media day for the Michigan State basketball team. Can you believe that? This year has certainly flown by. Yes, Current Sports will be at media day. Tom Izzo hits the podium, and his team speaks out for the first time before things tip off this season. In just about every single preseason poll I read, MSU is ranked either one or number two in the nation. How about those expectations, folks? Now, much of that having to do with the main components, you know, from last year deciding not to leave and make that jump to the pros. Adrian Payne, of course, Gary Harris. I mean, this team is loaded. They're not losing many parts, folks. Now, we are going to take your calls throughout today's entire show on just how good you think this year's MSU basketball team will be. Call us. 517-355-9527. Again, that's 517-355-9527. You can leave a comment on our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports or even tweet me at AlMartinWKAR. Well, let's dive into today's show. We got a ton to talk about. Here are your current sports headlines on this October 22nd, 2013. The MSU and Michigan time, football game time, has been announced, people. Michigan State's home game against number 24th-ranked Michigan on November 2nd will start at 3:30 p.m., and it will be televised by ABC. The Big Ten announced this time slot yesterday. Now, MSU has won four of the last five meetings between the schools, including the last two at Spartan Stadium. Michigan, which has a bye week this week, will enter the contest against Michigan State at 6-1 and 2-1 in the Big Ten. Again, November 2nd, MSU in Michigan time is 3:30 p.m. It will be televised by ABC. All right. I also want to note a pretty cool event. The MSU Rebounders Club, they will host the annual membership tip-off event at the Breslin Center on, it's actually tomorrow, October 23rd, Wednesday, October 23rd. The event is free for Rebounders members. Members may bring guests at a cost of $10 each payable at the door. You may join the club at the event if you want to. Now, memberships are $35 for individuals and $50 for families. Now, doors open at 4 p.m. You can watch practice. You can visit the locker room. You can also hear Coach Tom Izzo speak at 5:45 p.m. and get player autographs and so much more. Concessions will be open to purchase food if desired. Free parking in lot 63C. Enter through the ticket office doors. That's the MSU Rebounders Club. Again, that's the annual membership tip-off event at the Breslin Center. All right, Javon Best, following a text message to his Lincoln High School in Ohio, shooting guard Javon Best became the second commit in Michigan State's class of 2014. Lincoln Athletic Director Justin Sanford, he told Diamond Leung of M Live on Monday afternoon following the commitment that, quote, "We got a text from Javon saying I committed to Michigan State." Now, the 6'5" Best, he held other offers from Dayton, Kansas State, UMass, Xavier. This summer, he ran with All Ohio Red in the Nike EYBL. Now, during the summer, he averaged 11.5 points, 6 rebounds, a little over 2 assists, and a steal per game, playing alongside Ohio State commit Deshaun Tate and Purdue commit Vincent Edwards. He is rated as a 3-star commit by rivals. So he's a 3-star commit. Best also joins Sunrise Christian Academy's point guard Lou Rawls, Tum-Tum name, in the Spartans class of 2014. Can you believe that? Tum-Tum. I'm still not over that. Lou Rawls is his first name and Tum-Tum is his nickname. All right, I could go on and on. I'm going to have some fun with that when he comes here. The 5'10" name, he will start, Narwin, committed on September 26th. Classic. So there you have, you got Bess, you got Javon Bess now, and Lou Rawls, Tum Tum Narwin. How about that? All right, Demarius Reed. This is a very, very sad story. Eastern Michigan University has scheduled a second campus safety forum to provide an update regarding the Friday homicide of EMU football player Demarius Reed. This is according to Police Chief Bob Heeks. Now, the forum will be at 4 p.m. Tuesday. That's 4 p.m. today at the Student Center at 900 Oakwood Drive. And the city of Ypsilanti's interim police chief, Tony Gusidi, they will also be attending the event. Now, Ypsilanti Police Lieutenant Derek Griss, he said Monday afternoon that police continue to work around the clock to solve this homicide investigation. Reed was found dead from several gunshot wounds on Friday morning at the University Green apartment complex in the 700 block of West Clark Road. Now, university officials fielded questions from students and concerned members of the campus community at the first forum, which was held on Friday. Now, EMU President Susan Martin said part of the reason for holding a second forum was to give students and residents a chance to hear from Ypsilanti Police. Again, that forum is 4 p.m. today at the Student Center of 900 Oakwood Drive. Sad news, you know, to hear about the passing of Demarius Reed. But let's hope this forum definitely solves some issues there. All right, Red Wings and Sharks, after scoring 39 goals in their first eight games, the San Jose Sharks prove they can play pretty well defensively, too. Now, Logan Couture, he scored in the shootout, and San Jose beat the Detroit Red Wings 1-0 on Monday night. Now, the Sharks are 8-0-1. They are the NHL's last team without a regulation loss. Now, each goalie got a shutout for not allowing a goal in 65 minutes. Nitti Niemi, who got his 24th career shutout, made 24 saves for San Jose. And Jimmy Howard, yes, he's back. He earned his 17th shutout, stopped 27 shots last night. Now, Detroit still sits atop the Atlantic. Also want to note that Nicholas Cronwall, he missed his second game with a concussion suffered Thursday night in Colorado. It was on a hit from behind by Cody McLeod, who was suspended for five games on Monday by the NHL. All right, this Sunday's highly anticipated Lions-Cowboys game may have just gotten some bulletin board material. Now, in an interview with 103.3 FM ESPN in Dallas, Cowboys wide receiver Dez Bryant compared himself favorably with Lions All-Pro Calvin Johnson. That's right, Megatron. He says, quote, "I believe I can do whatever he can do. I think it's just a pride thing. When it comes to football, just being on the field, it's a mindset and having a mentality. I honestly believe when I'm there, I'll be feeling like there's nothing I can't do. Whatever the coaches ask me to do, I'm going to do it." Wow, bold statement right there. Dez Bryant comparing himself to Megatron and saying he can do whatever he can do. I don't think so, Dez. I love you, but I don't think so. Now, while Bryant's comments aren't exactly on par with former Cowboys defensive coordinator, Rob Ryan in 2011, when he said his defense worked, quote, "against better receivers in Miles Austin and Dez Bryant," end quote, in practice, it may not be a good idea to compare yourself with Megatron, all right? Now, in 2011, Johnson had eight catches for 96 yards and two TDs, including one in triple coverage, and one we saw that this past weekend that was just unbelievable, an unbelievable catch, maybe the highlight of the year for the Lions. So, Dez Bryant, I don't know about that, man. All right, Redskins safety Brandon Merriweather has been suspended two games by the NFL after multiple personal foul penalties in Sunday's win over the Bears. Merriweather, who hit receiver Alshon Jeffrey helmet to helmet and later launched himself into receiver Brandon Marshall, he's no stranger to league discipline. Now, he was fined in week two for a hit against Green Bay and was also fined over $90,000 in the 2010-2011 seasons. So, quote, "no matter what I do, I feel I'll be in the wrong. If you hit in the shoulder and slipped up, they may still say it's head-to-head. If I hit him too low, I think somebody just got flagged for hitting somebody too low. It all depends on who's watching. I don't think we can be right." He goes on to say, "I think they're trying to be safe, and I think the only way to be safe is to do what they're doing. But at the same time, this is tackle football. A job of a safety is to instill fear, and you can't do that with pulling up." So Merriweather definitely has some validity to that argument, but Merriweather is expected to file an appeal with the league office. No surprise there. All right, no bowl for the Canes. The 6-0 Miami Hurricanes, no bowl ban, excuse me, for the Canes. The 6-0 Miami Hurricanes will not face a bowl ban from the NCAA after punishment was handed down for the Nevin Shapiro scandal in Coral Gables. Now, the Canes, who sat out from bowl games the past two seasons on a self-imposed ban, will lose 9 scholarships, however, over the next 3 years as punishment for the scandal. Now, the self-imposed ban played a key role in the university avoiding any further bowl-related discipline. An NCAA spokesman said, quote, "The committee acknowledged and accepted the extensive and significant self-imposed penalties by the university. Now, in addition, the entire athletic program has been placed on 3 years probation, and the men's basketball program will also lose 3 scholarships." Now, former Miami and current Missouri basketball coach Frank Haith will be suspended 5 games, and Jorge Fernandez is one of the 3 former assistant coaches who will receive a 2-year show cause penalty. All right, Brian Price, pitching coach Brian Price, will be named the 61st manager of the Reds at a press conference today. Price, the general manager, Walter Jochetti, did not return phone calls Monday evening, but Price replaces Dusty Baker, who was fired after 6 seasons on the job. Price and AAA manager Jim Riggleman were the only confirmed candidates for the job. Now, Price has been the Reds pitching coach since the 2010 season. Before coming to the Reds, he spent 10 years as a big league pitching coach, first with the Seattle Mariners and then with the Arizona Diamondbacks. This is a pretty funny story here. I think parents is kind of going overboard, and you got to learn how to lose sometimes, all right? In Texas, at Aledo Texas High School, they beat Fort Worth Western Hills. Get this, 91-0. 91-0. This is high school football we're talking about. 91-0 over the weekend, and a Western Hills parent didn't sit too well with him, so he filed a bullying complaint against Aledo coach Tim Buchanan. That's according to Ryan Osborne of the Star-Telegram. Now, when you look at the score, it doesn't look pretty at all. Now, Aledo, which is ranked number 1 in the Associated Press statewide Class Division 4A poll, they blew Western Hills off the field. It didn't look good as the game approached. Now, Aledo has averaged, this is nothing new, though, with this team. Aledo has averaged 69.3 points per game this season. The Bearcats have scored at least 77 points. Yes, 77. They're averaging almost 77 points. They scored at least 77 points in each of the past 4 games and has yet to be held under 44 points. That's unbelievable. On the other side, you got Western Hills, who entered the game 0-6 and had only around 30 players on the night of the game. You got to be kidding me. So let's look at the facts. Little's offensive starters played only 21 snaps. The Bearcats quarterbacks combined for only 10 pass attempts. And a running clock was implemented in the third quarter, and the Bearcats rushed most of the game. 391 yards they let up, though. Western Hills let up in 8 touchdowns. They were trying not to run up the score. You just got to play better than that. You got to play better than that. That's just a parent, an angry parent, just kind of taking it too personal. You got to learn how to lose just as much as you got to learn how to win. All right, folks. Well, those are your current sports headlines for today. If you want to comment on any of those, give us a call at 517-355-9527. Again, that's 517-355-9527. Or comment on our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports, or even tweet me at AlMartinWKAR. Now, we are also taking your calls throughout this entire show on just how good this year's MSU men's basketball team will be. Yes, Media Day will be taking place today. Matt and I will be jetting out of here as soon as the show ends to head to Coach Izzo's 2 p.m. presser and to pick the brain of, some of the MSU players. Again, give us your thoughts on the upcoming season for the team, 517-355-9527. In the meantime, let's wrap up the Detroit Tigers season in a pretty cool feature. Now, John Rosengren is the Twin Cities-based author of the new book, Hank Greenberg, Hero of Heroes. Now, Rosengren's work follows the story of the Detroit Tiger Hall of Famer and his exploits during the decades of the 1930s and 40s. Now, we heard from John earlier this year in celebration of the 80th anniversary of Hammerin' Hank's rookie season. Now, John Rosengren's research brings him a deep understanding of Detroit Tiger teams from the Depression years through World War II and what those clubs meant to the Motor City. Now, WKAR's Peter Wharf recently met with John Rosengren, who begins their conversation by recalling a pivotal year for the Detroit Tigers.
So in 1934, Hank Greenberg and the Detroit Tigers unseated the mighty New York Yankees of Lou Gehrig, Babe Ruth, Tony Lazzari, Lefty Gomez, and they provided the Detroit public with a lot of excitement, and at a time when it was very the city was in a mood of despair. I mean, the Depression had hit the city hard. Auto production from 1929 to 1931 had fallen 75%. Unemployment by 1935 was almost 50%, about 46%. And so the city was bankrupt, paying its employees and scrip. And so there was this mood of despair in the city, except at Navin Field, Greenberg and Goose Goslin and Mickey Cochran and Charlie Gehringer and the rest of the Tigers were challenging the Yankees for the pennant and providing a sense of hope and civic pride. And they prevailed and won the pennant, the first pennant that Detroit had had since 1909. There had been this 25-year drought in the city, and so Detroit fans were excited to have that pennant and feel this mood of victory, and you know, we're number one on top again. They lost in the World Series to the Cardinals.
Right.
And then in the next year, 35, Greenberg's the MVP of the American League, and they win the pennant once again, and Detroit becomes the city of champions with not only the Tiger success, but the Red Wings and also the Lions winning the titles. And so here Detroit is feeling, you know, wonderful, and the Tigers go on to win the World Series, and the mood in Detroit for that small sliver of time, those 2 years, they were able to forget the soup lines and the you know, the unemployment and the difficulties, and have a good feeling at least for that segment.
Up comes Goose Gun. It's a base hit. And now watch Mickey fly around those sacks. He rounds third. He's coming home. And here comes Mickey Cochran with the winning run. The run that won the game and the World Series for the Detroit Tigers.
That notion, City of Champions, I hadn't realized that the Tigers won World Series, NFL Championship, and the Stanley Cup in 35 all at once.
Right, and so that, hence the name, the City of Champions, and they had a banquet to honor the three teams, and you can imagine the civic pride that people were feeling during that time, and especially when, you know, the auto industry was so hard hit by the Depression, and what sports do best, I think, is bring a community together and help people feel good about themselves. And that's what those teams were doing, led by the Tigers, during a time when it truly was the national pastime, America's game.
We think of 29 as the stock market crash, and then the 30s are the years where things are really going downhill. But they went downhill for a long time. I mean, 34, 35, this is what people think of as sort of the heart, the deepest part of the Depression.
Yeah, America really didn't come out of the Depression or Detroit until they could became the arsenal of democracy, when they converted from auto production to making arms and for the war. And that happened in the 30s, first when they were supplying Europe with Britain with their machinery, and then the United States with their own machinery as the U.S. entered the war in 41. But the beginning, that 34-35 spell was the beginning of this trend, when the Tigers help Detroit feel better about themselves during tough times, or when the Tigers came through during tough times for Detroit, because you had 34-35, they won the pennant those years. 40, they won the pennant just as things were looking nasty in Europe. But then 45, they won the World Series right after the war, and as America's converting back to peacetime. And so here the Tigers help America feel good as they're healing from the war. And then they come through again in 68. Following the riots in Detroit, and bring the community together.
And the windup and the pitch. He swings a line shot, base hit, right field, the Tigers win it. Here comes K-Line to score, and it's all over. Don Wirtz singles, the Tigers mob Don. K-Line has scored, the fans are steaming on the field, and the Tigers have won their first pennant since 1945. Let's listen to the bedlam here at Tiger Stadium.
And then now, look at what they're doing now with the city again bankrupt, and population having decreased, and so many of the city having been gutted by the diaspora from downtown and hear the Tigers about to clinch the pennant and, you know, hopefully go deep in the playoffs.
As a kid who grew up in Michigan as a lifelong Tigers fan, I love this idea that you're expressing of the Detroit Tigers always being there during times that the people really need them.
Yeah, and that's what they did back in 34-35, and I think they're doing it again. I mean, I was at the ballpark last Sunday when they played the White Sox, and even though they lost the game, I mean, the stadium was packed, and the people were still glowing from the night before when they came back from a six-run deficit in the ninth, bottom of the ninth, tied it, and then went on to win in extra innings. So there was really the mood in the stadium was one of hope and just on the edge of joy. I think that they're waiting to feel the absolute joy till they clinch the pennant and then hopefully win the World Series. But there is that good feeling that the Tigers are bringing back to Detroit.
John Rosengren is the author of the 2013 book, Hank Greenberg, Hero of Heroes. John, thanks again for talking to us about some of the great Detroit Tigers teams of the 1930s and 40s and more. John, thanks very much.
Oh, you're welcome. My pleasure. Thanks for your interest.
For Current State, this is Peter Ward.
Will our ball club win the pennant? Do you think they have a chance? And tell me, friend, how in the world have you been?
Tell me what's up. Well, there you have it. A very, very cool piece. Again, that was WKAR's Peter Wharf sitting down with author John Rosengren. Very, very nice points made by John. Of course, back in the day, the Tigers kind of served as a rallying point for many during times of depression, times where Detroit was going through a lot. And I mean, if you look at now where Detroit, of course, those out there, it definitely hits me home because, me being born and raised in the city of Detroit and Detroit filing for bankruptcy, of course, earlier this year. Tough times in Detroit. And I know many of you out there, many Detroit Tigers fans out there were certainly hoping and praying and wishing for finally a Detroit Tigers pennant to return to the city. But again, the Detroit Tigers, they were eliminated by the Red Sox this past weekend. And now Jim Leland has decided to walk away and step down as the Detroit Tigers skipper after 8 seasons. But hey, it's been an incredible ride. And the Tigers, certainly many, many baseball fans and just Detroit fans in general, you got to appreciate what the Tigers did this year and what the success they've had, in years past. So thank you, Peter. Very, very good piece there and very, very well done. Thank you, John Rosengren, for your time. Well, when we return to Current Sports, we're going to talk a little, MSU and Michigan football, as well as get you prepared for the upcoming MSU men's basketball season. We'll be heading out to Media Day later on after the show and talking with Coach Tom Izzo and the team, and we are taking your calls on just how good you think this year's team will be. Give us a call, 517-355-9527. Again, that's 517-355-9527. Don't go anywhere. Current Sports is coming right back.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. Next time on Here and Now, world-famous chef Daniel Boulud has a new cookbook. He calls himself an American chef with a French soul and a French chef with an American soul.
Being able to borrow from other cuisine or from other palate and still remain French in the core of your cuisine.
Daniel Boulud, next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
That's Here and Now, coming up at 2 p.m.
You count on All Things Considered for many reasons. The biggest stories of the day, from around the world to your own backyard. The thoughtful commentaries, the insightful features, or all of the above. All Things Considered has been your trusted source for news every afternoon. I'm Brad Walker, your host for All Things Considered, and glad to be a part of this show. I'll see you at 4 this afternoon.
Welcome back to Current Sports. As always, I'm your host, Al Martin. Just finished with our headlines. Just finished bringing you guys a pretty good piece. Peter Wharf sitting down with author John Rosengren on the Detroit Tigers. Of course, the Tigers are now out of the postseason. Jim Leland decided to step down as manager. Great wrap-up piece for the season, I think. Thanks a lot, Peter, for bringing us that. It's also Tuesday, so you know that means that Mark D'Antonio has his weekly morning press conferences discussing the upcoming week and what the team's going through right now, how they're preparing. Looking through D'Antonio's quotes throughout today's presser, not much really standing out. I guess if you guys want to know about Benny Fowler, who, of course, is dealing with that hamstring injury, he is questionable. But D'Antonio said, quote, we are hoping to have him this week. D'Antonio on Max Bulla. Max Bulla, for those of you who don't know, he was named Big Ten Defensive Player of the Week. D'Antonio on Bulla today, quote, the bigger the game, the better he's going to play. Max Bulla is always such a, unbelievable player. He really is the rallying guy, the leader of that MSU defense. He went on also to say about Max Bulla, quote, he's a very communicative person. You need that in a huge linebacker position. D'Antonio, did you see anything, Matt? I didn't really see anything that really stood out to me going through the quotes. Of course, Alex was out there covering it for us. We'll have a lot of bites tomorrow on things, but just really generic stuff. One quote that kind of stood out to me was, when he was asked if he took any steps back, he went on to say, quote, did we take steps back last week? Probably. In some cases we did, in others we took a step forward. So, I think specifically, reading between the lines of that quote, he may be talking about that MSU offense,
It would make sense if he was. Yeah. And, you said there's nothing that really sticks out, and that's kind of the spot they're at, just in the grander scheme of things. You know, they're unranked this week,
right.
Under the radar at 6-1, and we're just getting started. The season's just revving up. All the big games come in November, not to sell Illinois short. That's obviously, the next game on the schedule is the biggest game. That is a big game. They have to win at Illinois to set up kind of that Legends Division gauntlet that is November. And I think, at this point in the season, there should be, no big, no super exciting pressers. They should be just, this is business as usual. We're moving forward. They did have a poor effort last week. Hopefully they can kind of remedy some of those things, especially offensively.
Right.
I think last week was their letdown game, and I'm looking for a bounce-back effort this weekend.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I hope that Connor, he just didn't – one of the biggest things, Connor just didn't look like himself in that last game. The offense kind of just looked – and it started with Connor because he – there were guys open. He was just missing, overthrown balls, a lot of, not reading the defense as well as he should. The running back position, Jeremy Langford played great defense. They got a shutout. And, this is a team who only has one loss in the season. They're still not ranked. And, I talked to, some of the players on, after that game and asked them, does that bother them, not being ranked? And, MSU, they like being under the radar. They like having that, not all the attention on them. It makes it easier for them to go out there and do their jobs. And, they do think about it from time to time, but it's not one of those things they harp on, And D'Antonio addressed it during his presser. And I thought, I talked to you after, during the presser when D'Antonio mentioned it. And it seemed like it kind of bothered D'Antonio to a degree. I don't know. I kind of got that vibe when he was talking about it, saying, hey, we don't care if we're not ranked. We're just going to go out there and just handle our business, blah, blah, blah. But, the tone in which he said it is kind of like, okay, D'Antonio wants respect. He wants some respect for this team, even though,
if you want respect, though, you got to earn it.
You got to earn it. That's
very
true.
They've only blown out two teams.
Right,
Indiana,
from D'Antonio perspective.
And Youngstown State.
As far as, because, D'Antonio is a guy, he's a blue-collar type of coach. I guess from looking at the perspective of what their record is and the wins that they've gotten, he believes that they should be ranked. That's the vibe I got from that presser. And, he had a quote today that kind of addresses it a little bit. He says, quote, what matters to us are the people in our little bubble. Not many outside that right now. So he's basically, it seems as though he's kind of just fed up with it and just says, hey, we're going to go out there and just handle our business. Rank us if you want to. We're going to go out there and play as hard as we can and try to rack up these wins. And that's the attitude you got
to
have.
All you have to do because, the ranking doesn't matter if they win their division and go to the Big Ten title game. Then they have the opportunity to get where they wanted to go at the beginning of the year, and that's the Rose Bowl. And that's all they've ever cared about. I mean, if they lose down the stretch and go, let's say, 10-2 and 7-1, they're not going to get a BCS bowl game anyway.
No. No.
They don't have the clout with the rankings. They didn't start high enough in the preseason to get anywhere. So just handle your business, win the games in front of you, and at the end of the year, if you do what you're supposed to do, you will be in a position to get where you want to go.
Right,
and
exactly.
It's generic and it's cliche, but it's true. Just take care of the games in front of you. Don't worry about the rankings or any of that. It doesn't matter.
Just got to go out there and handle your business, you know. And for those of you who don't know, MSU became bowl eligible this past weekend. A storyline that, you know, now is like – becoming bowl eligible is expected for this MSU football team, which is a big reason why it wasn't talked about much this past weekend. So as far as injury reports for you guys, of course, Jairus Jones, who went out with a knee injury a couple weeks ago, D'Antonio says that Jairus Jones is not practicing, but he could return during MSU's bye week. Right now, he says, quote, right now he's a late season guy if we get him back. So don't expect too much. Jairus Jones is still just trying to recuperate. And, you know, Jairus Jones, a guy, if you look at that first game, who had, you know, the interception, he had a few nice tackles. He had an interception for a return, a touchdown. I'm like, oh, man, this guy could, you know, possibly take that starting spot from Taiwan. And then all of a sudden he gets injured. A guy who's just been really plagued by injuries throughout his MSU career. So there's an injury report.
And he was a perfect complement to Tuan Jones because
one's
the big run stuffer and the other is a coverage guy, and he would have been very valuable going down the stretch against these spread teams that have mobile quarterbacks because he's a faster option. He's better in pass coverage. He would be very valuable down the stretch. Hopefully they can get him back sooner rather than later.
Yeah, without a doubt. Well, only time will tell. All right, really briefly, let's talk about this U of M and Indiana game that we didn't get to yesterday. Now, Michigan had a record-breaking day on offense, and his defense was almost bad enough to overcome that. They were so – that defense – for both teams, the defense was so terrible. But anyway, Devin Gardner, he set school records with 584 yards of offense and 503 yards passing and matched another mark with five touchdowns. A lot of fives there. Five touchdowns to help Wolverines. The Wolverines outscore Indiana 63-47. That's a basketball score, ladies and gents. Now, Gardner completed 21 of 29 passes for two TDs and avoided throwing an interception for the second time in 3 weeks. Brady Hoke said afterwards, quote, we won the football game. That's the only thing I care about. Jeremy Gallen had a Big Ten record, 369 yards receiving and two touchdowns on 14 receptions for the Wolverines. much to the dismay of Kevin Wilson, Indiana's head football coach, who said afterwards on Jeremy Gallen's performance, quote, ridiculous, end quote. Now, Fitzgerald Toussaint had 151 yards rushing for the Wolverines and scored for a fourth time with a minute and 12 left in the shutout. Now, the Wolverines set a school record with, get this, 751 yards of offense. Michigan has won 19 straight at home now, the longest streak by a BCS conference team, and 18 in a row against Indiana now. Now, the Wolverines' next game is November 2nd, of course, at Michigan State, 3:30 p.m. on ABC. The Hoosiers are also idle next week before hosting Minnesota. Matt, when I was watching that game, you know, I just stood there and shook my head saying, this has to be one of the worst defensive games I have ever seen in the history of college football.
It was
unbelievable.
It was a lot like a tennis match where your head just keeps going from side to side watching, but instead of the ball going on either side, it was just players just streaking down the field. It was legitimately a track meet.
Entertaining.
Very entertaining.
If you're a fan watching that game and you're just watching it, I mean, action all the time, offense all the time, but as just a football guy looking at the defense and the offensive end of things, it's got to be frustrating. You know, watching, I'm sitting there like, what in the world is going on? It's like the guys didn't even show up to play defense.
Yeah.
It's like, here's yardage, take it. Unbelievable.
And it was close right to the very end. Indiana had some timely turnovers at the end that cost him the game.
Yeah.
And looking at Indiana, I don't know why Sudfeld plays over Roberson. I think Roberson is a much better quarterback.
I think so, too.
He left late with, like, a hand cramp.
Right.
And I think that might have, you know, really played a big factor in the outcome of the game because obviously they were moving down the field. I mean, it was up and down
rapid
the
fire.
Entire game.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, you know, there might have been four tackles total in the entire game. It was pathetic defensively.
It was pathetic. Again, if you're a fan, you love it. Like I said, Gallen had mad numbers. Just look at his numbers. Again, 369 yards receiving. I had those numbers the other day playing my uncle in Madden. I mean, that's ridiculous right there. I mean, you got to show. I think if Michigan's defense, Michigan State better hope that Michigan's defense plays that bad against them on November 2nd because Connor Cook, if you're Connor Cook, you got to be, you know, feeling pretty good after watching that game.
No, it's going to be a very interesting game because it's, you know, strength against strength and weakness against weakness.
Right.
And I think, you know, it could easily go either way. It's going to be a really fun game to watch just because Michigan's offense, when they're rolling, is definitely very dangerous.
Oh, yeah, without
a doubt. But, you know, I think, you know, avoiding interceptions is going to be a little bit easier against Indiana than it is against the best defense in the country.
Yeah, very true. And, you know, props to Gardner because, I mean, looking at those past few games before that Indiana game, I mean, he's been so turnover prone. I mean, fumbles and not reading, just, you know, picks here left and right, you know, situational picks too. I mean, it costs you valuable points. Michigan has been fortunate, though, throughout this season to, you know, counteract those. But Devin Gardner has to take care of the ball better. And, you know, again, when you're going against the nation's best defense against Michigan State, you got to bring it. You can't have those mistakes. And he didn't have any mistakes, I tell you, on Saturday because he looked great. The offense looked great. But like I said, if you're Connor Cook and you're sitting back coming off an offensive performance where, you know, you didn't look like yourself, you didn't look like you had, you know, the previous two games, and you look at what Michigan has done, you use this game as a rebound game for you against Illinois, and you look at that Indiana game that Michigan played, and you say, okay, you know, I kind of can settle in now, and I know what to kind of expect. I mean, I don't expect the defense to play that bad against Michigan State, though. But I said, if you're Connor Cook looking at that game, you got to feel pretty good. So
yeah, there's definitely holes to exploit.
Benny, it's like Swiss cheese. Holes everywhere.
Yeah.
Holes everywhere in that defense, man. All right, really quickly, we'll be heading out to MSU Basketball Media Day. Is this your first Media Day, Matt?
It is.
This is your first one, man. It should be a fun time. You get to hear Izzo talk your ear off and, you know, kind of talk with the players a little bit. It should be a fun time. Just as a MSU big team, just diving into this MSU basketball team, every preseason report you read, I have right now, Athon Sports. I buy this every single year. They have a college basketball preview every year. I bought this at Meijer the other day, and they have Michigan State going all the way. Michigan State going all the way. Of course, in the Big Ten, they have Michigan State 1. This is their prediction. Michigan State's number 1 in the Big Ten. Going out of order here. I don't feel like flipping through the pages and getting the exact order right. Indiana's number 5. Iowa Hawkeyes finishing at 6. Michigan Wolverines finishing at number 3. You got Minnesota at 9, Nebraska at 12, Ohio State finishing at 2. I mean, I could go on and on. But my point is the expectations for this Michigan State basketball team are so high, very, very high. And I tell you what, they got NBA talent inside and out. You got a senior point guard now, Keith Appling. Excellent shooting, I think, at both the 2 and 4. Don't forget, Adrian Payne can light it up deep. And solid skill size off the bench. This MSU team, man, I just hope it's not one of those years where the expectations are so high that this team feels so much pressure that, you know, it kind of overwhelms them. I don't know. What do you think, Matt?
Yeah, that's a possibility, but I just feel like they have so much senior, you know, leadership, and all these guys are so experienced now. I mean, mm-hmm. Gary Harris, you know, as a sophomore, is probably the least experienced starter, you know, tentatively, depending on who they start as the bigs.
Right.
And he's Big Ten Freshman of the Year. You know, he's a heck of a player. He's looking to come back. You know, he could have gone to the NBA, came back. They have guys who definitely have pro aspirations, and that could be troubling, and that's been troubling in the past.
Right.
But at the same time, you know, you just get the feeling that these guys get it. There's not a lot of weaknesses on paper. There's not really any weaknesses on paper. I mean, you look at the leaps that could be made by guys like Travis Trice, who finally was healthy in the offseason.
Yeah.
Denzel Valentine going into his sophomore season. I mean, Alex Gauna, I think, is going to be a solid contributor this year.
I think so, too. Maybe, looking at Costello as well.
Maybe Costello's...
Yeah.
He was there defensively.
Without a doubt.
Offensively, he needs to round into form a little bit.
And they said offensively, I mean, in the offseason, Costello really went to work, and he looks more polished down low. He's got more weapons in his repertoire. I'm definitely looking for – I mean, when you look at all around, this team all around, and defensively, looking at last season, they were great defensively last season. That's something that Tom Izzo prides himself on. If you look at the scoring defense, they were ranked number 2 in the Big Ten last season. But as far as defensively goes, this team is very well-rounded defensively. Keith Appling is one of the best defensive guard in the country. Reports are coming out that Gary Harris has worked on his defense a lot in the offseason. So defensively, they're going to be solid. They got a lot of scoring options. The only thing, going back to the leadership, I'm really interested in the leadership of this team this year. You know, I've always said in the past, and we talked about briefly this MSU basketball team, MSU has been known for, you know, those in-your-face type of leaders, you know, those Draymond Green, Mateen Cleaves type of guys that when you're slacking, hey, what are you doing, dude? Let's, you know, just real vocal type of guys. On this basketball team, you don't have it. And you didn't have it really last year either, you know. Nick's tried it, but Nick's, you know, he's not that type of guy. I mean, and Appling is a guy who, you know, and you're here, probably here today in Media Day, that he's going to be, he's the outright leader of this team. But Keith is a silent leader. He's a guy who leads by example. He's a guy who goes out there, works hard. He shows you leadership. You know what I mean? He's not the type of guy that's going to, you know, cuss you out in the sidelines and say, let's get it going. And I'm really interested to see how that dynamic plays out as the season goes on. And maybe, you know, someone that we may not expect to be a leader on this team emerges as that guy.
Yeah, it's definitely possible. If I was going to compare this to an MSU team in the past, I think I would have to go with the 05 team, the 04-05 team that went to the Final Four in St. Louis. They had so much talent in the wings. They had Paul Davis in the middle. He's kind of the Adrian Payne proxy for this analogy. But they just had a lot of guys, not one standout leader, not one standout, you know, this is your best player by far. It was just a collection of guys. They could run the floor. I think this team will run more than we've seen in the past. If they can cut down on the turnovers, which always plague Izzo teams, especially early in the year, the sky is the absolute limit. They are going to be really good. I think they're deep. They go a legit 10 deep, 12 if you count the freshmen.
Oh, yeah.
They've just got guys coming off the bench in waves.
And they do.
They can keep running. I mean, Trice and Valentine potentially off the bench.
Right.
That's a starting Big Ten backcourt for a lot of teams.
You know what? Looking at Denzel Valentine, I mean, Denzel is a guy who I've always said he has unbelievable court vision. He sees the court unlike – I haven't seen his court vision at MSU. The way he sees the floor, I haven't seen that in quite a long time for this MSU basketball team. The thing is, you know, last year, you know, Denzel's freshman year, I mean, I thought a lot of that vision – some of those passes you can get away with in high school – but in college, just him adjusting and seeing certain things and knowing that, you know, I can probably fit that hole through, you know, going against Lansing Eastern. But going against Iowa, I don't know if I can force – he forced a lot of things here.
Yeah, and you know some of the alley-oops he threw, like, it's okay if you're playing for the Heat and LeBron is going to be on the other end of that. But, like, we don't have a LeBron. Right. Like, Adrian Payne is a heck of an athlete, and so is Dawson.
So is Dawson, yeah.
But, you know, these are guys – you know, these are passes that were just, you know – At the highest NBA level would still be an amazing play.
but he's
looking
plays.
For it. That's the kind of plays he's looking for.
Right, right,
those
exactly.
Those highlight reel plays. And he just needs to take it a little bit slower.
Right, just slow it, simmer it
down a little
bit.
Sprinkle those in.
Exactly. You know, it got so bad last season that Izzo had to have a sit down with him, Carlton, his dad, of course, Carlton Valentine, to just kind of talk about things. But we'll see. We'll be out at Media Day today. Media Day. Tom Izzo's talking in 20 minutes. We have to shoot over there real quick, Matt, but we still got a lot of show left for you. Top 5 Tuesday, we were singing. Me and Alex are singing because we lost last month. Oh, my gosh, that should be embarrassing. But, yeah, we're going to take a quick break and come right back. More current sports is coming right at you.
The world is entering a post-antibiotic era, reports David Hoffman. Several strains of deadly bacteria have become resistant to antibiotics, and there's surprisingly little research being conducted into new drugs. On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Hoffman about his new PBS Frontline report, Hunting the Nightmare Bacteria. Join us.
That's Fresh Air coming up at 3 o'clock. Welcome back to Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. It's Tuesday, so you know that means Top 5 Tuesday. And in honor of Michigan State's football team and football program, I should say, they in honor of them playing their first, well, their 500th Spartan game at Spartan Stadium on October 12th, with the Spartans defeating Indiana 42-28 on homecoming. In honor of that, that was the 500th game at Spartan Stadium. We decided to give you our top five MSU football games of all time. You guys ready? It should be an exciting one. I mean, the history of this of the MSU football program is definitely rich. And I guess I'll start off. I'll kick it off with five for me. This is kind of like my own personal list. So you'll see a few recent games. Of course, you got to go back in time because there's been so many good games over time. But for me, start at number five. Guys, I got to go with Michigan State and Notre Dame back in 1966. Just that game was, from a historical perspective, it represented a pivotal point in which sports, you know, how we view sports in a way, turned forever. In that game, there was a crowd of 80,011 people. Unbelievable crowd there. 33 million people watching that game with, get this, 31 NFL future NFL players playing in it. I mean, that's just remarkable. It actually ended in a 10-10 tie. Can you believe that? 10-10 tie, November 19, 1966. That one just, you know, it was a pivotal point in sports just because of the tie, how many people were watching. I mean, the talent on the field. Unbelievable game there. So that was November 19th, 1966. Four for me had to be November 9th, 1974, Michigan State and Ohio State. It remains one of the most discussed Big Ten games ever. Ohio State came to Spartan Stadium with an 8-0 record. You know, eyes and goals on that national championship. The Buckeyes left with a devastating 16-13 defeat. Because I said 16-14 earlier, but 16-13 defeat thanks to an 88-yard romp up the right sideline by sophomore fullback Levy Jackson with just over 3 minutes to play. Unbelievable game right there. The Spartans defense sealed the win with a goal line stand as time ran out. There you have it. Michigan State 16-13 over Ohio State. Then I'm going to go 2001, guys, on you for my number three pick. Michigan State 26, Michigan 24. Michigan, of course, it's known as Clockgate. We all know this game. With the TJ Duckett, excuse me, 2-yard touchdown from Jeff Smoker to win it. We had TJ on the show, actually, and he talked about that game and what it meant in Spartan history. Unbelievable moment there. I'm going to go number two, September 18th, 2010. For me, I mean, this game, unbelievable. Michigan State and Notre Dame. Michigan State wins 34-31. Overtime victory against Notre Dame. The play we all have heard this many times. Little Giants. Holder Aaron Bates popped up. You know, everybody thinks it's going to be a field goal. D'Antonio surprises everyone. Aaron Bates took two steps to his right and threw a perfect 29-yard game-winning touchdown pass to tight end Charlie Gant for the win. Unbelievable moment. I was actually on the field during that game, and because this is when I was with the Big Ten Network Student U when I was in college. You know how you're supposed to wear the ESPN vest. You're not supposed to, you know, and no cheering in the press box. If you're wearing, especially if you're wearing an ESPN vest, no bias at all. That totally went out the window when that moment happened for me. When it happened, I ran on the field. I remember vividly Kirk Cousins running when he was running towards the locker room, giving me a high five. I high five Kirk Cousins. I had to contain myself that game. It was unbelievable. The atmosphere was unbelievable. It was a night game. One of the special moments, not only in just MSU football history, but for me in college. I mean, that was unbelievable. And for number one, I got to go with another unbelievable game. This one happened a year later, October 22nd, 2011. Michigan State, Wisconsin, 37-31. Man, it was secured by Kirk Cousins' 44-yard Hail Mary touchdown pass to Keith Nichol. Without that win, MSU wouldn't have won the inaugural Legends Division title or played in the first Big Ten championship game in quite a while. Michigan State 37-31. That definitely stood out to me. That Hail Mary pass is unbelievable, guys. So, what's your list look like? What do you guys have?
All right, starting it off at number five, I'll go real quick. The Boise State Monday Night Football game from last year, Friday night. It's not the most prestigious game. It's not like, oh, they upset the number one team.
Yeah.
Well, for me, it was just a monumental because it was the first night game in Spartan Stadium. It was Mark Hollis trying a bunch of new things. So I that's why I put it as number five and more of a more recent list.
Mm. I fell asleep on that game. I was covering it, but
it was a pretty good opponent, like not a usual opponent.
Boise State,
I thought it was cool.
Yeah.
Number four. The game of the century, like you said, Al, just with all the pro talent from that year, it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Number three, the little Giants play over Notre Dame in 2010. Number two, I have the Hail Mary pass at number two against Wisconsin, and I have the clock, the TJ Duckett clock eight touchdown at number one, just because it was against Michigan. That was a big game. I know Michigan was all – I think they were almost looking at a national championship that year, if I'm not
correct. I believe so,
I'm not mistaken. So, I mean, I thought that was a pretty big victory too. So, although that they wouldn't have had the Legends division last year with the Keith Nichol pass, I still think the Michigan game was just bigger. I was there, so maybe a little biased. Just like you were.
Yeah. I mean, like if you're there, that's the thing about, you know, when you talk about your top five, because me, this is a personal top five for me. I mean, being at the game, you know what I mean, and experiencing that moment is something you'll never forget. It's something that you'll look back, you know, when you get old and gray, that you'll tell your grandkids that I was at that game, and all those emotions come back to you. I mean, it makes it personal, and, you know, it's one of those things where this is one of those top five Tuesdays where, you know, we all went to Michigan State, we all been to many games, and, you know, you remember those games, that those historical games that stick out because you were there. You got to experience it, you know what I mean? So, go ahead.
Yeah, and I think I'm going to carry that through with my list because I know the game of the century was huge.
Yeah,
but I was not even close to being around in 1966, so I'm going to have that as an honorable mention, even though I know historically it is probably the most important, and, you know, it's a big deal because Notre Dame took the air out of the ball and played for the tie instead of going for the win. That's why it's such a huge deal.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt.
They didn't go for the win. They played for the tie.
That's why it's at number
five.
Ended
up 10-10, and Notre Dame gets us in the polls. But, okay, moving on.
Yeah.
Number five, I'm going to go a little different. I'm going to go 1999, MSU versus Oregon. It was Amp Campbell's shining moment. The previous year, they played at Oregon. He had a very serious neck injury. Could have been career-threatening. Comes back the next year. Oregon jumps out to a 17-7 lead. Game's tied at 17. Campbell scoops up a fumble, returns it 85 yards for a touchdown in an eventual 27-20 win. It was just a big... It was a special moment because the guy, his career almost ended the year before, comes back the next year against the same team, has the game-changing play.
What year was that?
Big moment, 1999.
1999, gosh.
Then I go to 2000, and I was at this game. This is my first Spartan game.
Really?
Never forget it. Smoker to Haygood, 4th-and-10 versus Notre Dame for a huge, huge score to win the game. Less than 2 minutes left. They beat Notre Dame that year. That was when Bob Davies could not beat MSU under any circumstances. Number three, I guess I will go Little Giants. Mm-hmm. It's obviously a great play, you know, just hilarious moment watching Brian Kelly's face just kind of, just,
and you know, for me,
beat red.
Yeah, looking at D'Antonio and him to take the risk to do that. You know, D'Antonio is not known for, you know, risk taking calls over, you know, throughout the plethora of his career. For him to do that and then the heart attack. A lot of people forget about the heart attack. He had a heart attack after that game.
I know.
I mean, that whole moment was just jaw-dropping, you know?
It was a special moment, absolutely. Number two for me, I'm going to go Smoker to Duckett. Obviously, the big controversy over the clock gate, and, you know, there was a Michigan penalty earlier in the drive for too many men on the field. There's a lot of stuff going on in that game that kind of gets brushed under the rug, and, you know, it's outweighed by the clock gate fiasco, I guess, so to speak. But obviously, it's a classic game in the rivalry for sure. Number one for me, it's got to be Rocket. And not just because the game ended on a Hail Mary, but because that was a great game. The first of two classic all-time battles between MSU and Wisconsin.
Yeah.
It stinks that we don't play Wisconsin every year. And this is one of the reasons why. I mean, Wisconsin jumps out to a 14-0 lead. MSU has a 23-point second quarter with a blocked punt. I mean, there is everything you could ever want to see in a college football game. In that game, Wisconsin closes late with Russell Wilson, and then we all know what happens at the end.
44 yards, baby. Hail Mary.
By the thinnest of margins does he clear that goal line.
Oh, without a doubt.
But that's all that matters.
I believe they went to, they went to the replay and looked at it, and it was unbelievable. And you could just hear, once that moment happened.
The ref couldn't even announce it. He was so nervous because, you know, he knew everybody's going to go crazy. He stumbles over the speech giving us the win. But everybody loved it.
It was unbelievable. And you know what? You know, a funny story about that game. I wasn't covering that game. This is still when I was in college. And I was at a frat brother's house of mine. Well, his dorm room in Holden. And, you know, Holden is not that far from Spartan Stadium, of course. And once it happened, we go crazy in the dorm room. We go nuts when it happens. They go to the replay. So I decided, you know, I need to see if I can hear the crowd from where Holden is and see the reaction. So we go outside. and it is complete. You can hear just the crowd chanting. I mean, the fiasco going on at Spartan Stadium. It was unbelievable. And, you know, again, that's one of those games, man, where it's not too far. I mean, that was that 2011? I mean, that's what, you know, two, three years ago. And, you know, it's one of those moments that, you know, us specifically, we look back at and just say, wow, you know. Great list, though. So we had the same number one. And, yeah. You know, Alex, you, what's your number one again?
I got the clock.
You got Clock Gate as number one, which, you know, that's an unbelievable game there, you know. So, yeah, again, give us your list. Go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports. Tweet me at Al Martin, WKAR, and give us your list. Of course, again, Michigan State, they played host to its 500th Spartan game on October 12th. Spartans defeated Indiana, of course, in homecoming 42-28. Give us your list, and you know, and we'll definitely discuss it as the time goes on. If you got any comments on it or anything, and also, Alex, we're about to embarrass ourselves because we lost. Finally, we're doing it. It's October 22nd, and we're finally going to rock the mic out. And before we get to that, I want to ask you guys: do you think we will have a memorable game? You know, in Spartan lore this season, because right now the way it's looking, it's tough to watch MSU this year, man. And I don't know if we had one last year either. You know, ones you look at, maybe the Iowa game had you on the edge of your seats, but still, it's one of those things. It just seems like the atmosphere as far as MSU football goes, it's not the same as it was, you know, 2 years ago when Kirk Cousins was here. To be honest with you, I mean, we saw the student section, and something we talked about yesterday. I mean, fans out there, students out there, if you got season tickets, please go to the games. You know what I mean? Because support your team. It's so upsetting, you know, being a Spartan alum and going to the games. Of course, we cover them here on Current Sports. It's our job. But going to the games and looking in the stands and seeing just empty rows of bleachers just left and right all around the stadium, I mean, that kind of kills the whole vibe of a football game, a college football game. And it's not a good look.
No. And, I mean, you paid for the tickets.
Right.
What else do you have to do?
I don't know, man. Some of them might be maybe like my roommate, where they get season tickets and they just sell each and every one and just inflate the price so they can make a profit off of them. I don't know. But still, man, you got to go to the games because it just creates a different lore, a different atmosphere. They kind of, if you don't have the crowd that you have at that Michigan State-Wisconsin game, I mean, the crowd has a lot to do with the atmosphere and how you perceive the game. And it hasn't been up to par this
season. Crowd can swing games in college sports.
Oh, yeah. Without a doubt. They're the 12th man, baby. The 12th man. So, but yeah. All right. So, again, give us your list. 517-355-9527. Give us a call. Go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports. Tweet me at Al Martin, WKAR. So, picks. Again, Alex and I, we lost last month. Yes, we lost the month of September. So, you know, as tradition here on Current Sports, those who lose month by month have to sing a song live on the show, and the winner gets to pick it. So, Matt, Alex and I lost. What song are we singing?
You guys are singing the karaoke classic, Islands in the Stream, originated by Kenny Rogers and Miss Dolly Parton.
Kenny Rogers and Dolly Parton. You going to sing You Want to Be Dolly?
It's going to be cute.
It's going to be cute. You want to be Dolly? I'll be Kenny.
Yeah, that's fine. I got the long hair going.
Before we get to that, gotta bid you guys adieu. Well, before we leave, special thanks to everyone that contributed to today's episode of Current Sports. Production assistants Alex Sharg and Matt Ludke, engineer Aaron Young, Peter Worf, our station manager here at WKAR. Thanks to all of you out there for tuning in. You've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKAR East Lansing and WKAR FM HD3 East Lansing. As always, take care, have a fantastic day, and be easy, people.
Peace unknown. I set out to get you with a fine-tooth comb. I was soft inside. There was something going on. Yeah. Something to me that I can't explain. Hold me closer and I feel no pain. Every beat of my heart. Got something going on.
It's going on.
Yeah. The love is blind. It requires dedication. Well, it's love we feel, no conversation.
ride it together. Uh-huh. Making love with each other. Uh-huh. In the street, that is what we are. No one in between. How can we be wrong? Sail away with me to another world. And we rely on each other. Uh-huh. From one lover to another. Uh-huh. Without you, if the love is gone, everything is nothing if you got no one. You've been walking.